Haridas Thakur replied, "My dear Lord, do not be in anxiety. Do not be unhappy to see the condition of the yavanas in material existence." Please repeat. Haridas Thakur replied, "My dear Lord, do not be in anxiety. Do not be unhappy to see the condition of the yavanas in material existence." Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. These words of Haridas Thakur are just befitting a devotee who has dedicated his life and soul to the service of the Lord. When the Lord is unhappy because of the condition of the fallen souls, the devotee consoles him, saying, "My dear Lord, do not be in anxiety." This is service. Everyone should adopt the cause of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to try to relieve him from the anxiety he feels. This is actually service to the Lord. One who tries to relieve Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's anxiety for the fallen souls is certainly a most dear and confidential devotee of the Lord. To blaspheme such a devotee who is trying his best to spread the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the greatest offense. One who does so is simply awaiting punishment for his envy. Om Gana Timurandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here this chapter is entitled The Glories of Haridas Thakur. And we're just in the middle of a conversation. I thought I'd read from the beginning of this section of the conversation, which starts on text 49. One day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Haridas Thakur, as usual, and in the course of discussion, he inquired as follows. "My dear Thakur Haridas, in this age of Kali, most people are bereft of Vedic culture, and therefore they are called Yavanas. They are concerned only with killing cows and Brahminical culture. In this way, they engage in sinful acts. How will these Yavanas be delivered? To my great unhappiness, I do not see any way." So this is what we just read, is Haridas Thakur's reply to this question of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How to deliver the Yavanas? Yavanas are those who are bereft of Vedic culture, which is 99.9% of the people of the world today. So Haridas Thakur says to the Lord, "Don't be in anxiety. Don't be unhappy to see the conditions of these Yavanas in material existence." And Prabhupada is saying to us in the purport that this should be all of our desire to relieve the anxiety Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu feels for the conditioned souls. So this is actually compassion, which is the discussion that we're having prior to Gaur Purnima. Compassion is discussed in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, that Arjuna, when he sees the so-called enemies that he's supposed to kill in the battle of Kurukshetra, he tells Krishna, "I don't want to fight." He's overwhelmed with compassion. Therefore, he wants to be nonviolent. And Krishna does not approve of this sort of compassion. In fact, he chastises Arjuna quite severely. "How have these impurities come upon you?" And Prabhupada explains that compassion, material compassion, compassion for the clothes of a drowning person, is senseless. If a person is drowning in the ocean and the lifesaver goes out and brings back the clothes that he was wearing, and meanwhile the person drowns, that's madness. That's simply madness. So this is what Krishna is telling Arjuna and telling all of us, that compassion must be properly placed. So it's not that we ignore the suffering of the body and the mind, because if we're suffering mentally or physically, it'll be very hard for us to understand, to appreciate, to hear about Krishna consciousness. So we want to take care of the body and the mind, but most important is the spiritual aspect, the soul. And this is what Krishna is awaking Arjuna to in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. This material compassion, which is very prominent in the world today, they want to feed the hungry, give shelter to the homeless, and so many other forms of compassion, which are good. It's in the mode of goodness. It's not that we criticize that, but we do say that it's incomplete. That without considering the needs of the soul, one is not fulfilling one's responsibility as a human being to oneself and to others also. So we don't want to give this compassion in a material way. We want to give it in a spiritual way. There's an interesting story, unusual story, in relation to this. When Srila Prabhupada was in India, in Delhi, in 1971, in December, there happened to be a war between India and Pakistan. And Delhi at that time had a complete blackout after dark. All lights were supposed to be extinguished. And there was a group of about 20 or 30 devotees with Prabhupada staying in an ashram in Delhi. And Prabhupada would speak in the evening just by candlelight, just one candle in the room, very dark, created quite an atmosphere. And he would speak philosophy, as he always did, very powerfully. And then sometimes he would ask his disciples to speak. So one evening, a sannyasi disciple, young sannyasi disciple, spoke. And he said that materially oriented person, they'll feel compassion for the orphans, for the homeless, for the hungry, for those who are illiterate, and so forth. But the devotee, the pure devotee, he feels compassion for everyone who is without their connection to Krishna. So a person may be living very opulently, be very powerful, be very rich or wealthy or beautiful, but the devotees, seeing that person without Krishna in their lives, without God in their lives, will feel great compassion for that person because they're suffering without that connection. That those material things that they are so attached to are temporary. Sooner or later, they'll all go. And the person will, the future of that person is quite unknown. More than likely, they'll be degraded to a lower form of life without any connection to genuine spirituality. So Prabhupada appreciated this very much, this realization of his young sannyasi disciple. And I think all of us need to have that kind of consciousness, that the tendency is that if we see someone with some material opulence, any material opulence, whether it's wealth or beauty or knowledge, power, influence, fame, whatever it is, the tendency is to think, oh, what a fortunate person. But actually, if that person is lacking in their connection to genuine spiritual life, to Krishna, that they are fallen, yavanas, and they need compassion. But this word compassion, I think we can understand a little more closely, in that it's actually a Latin word, and it's made up of two parts, cum, which means with, and pati, which means suffering. So compassion means you suffer with someone, which sounds a little bit like empathy, but empathy is actually different. Empathy, the word empathy comes from the word pathos or passion. And empathy means whatever the other person is experiencing, vicariously you also experience that. So that person may be suffering, so you suffer, but the person may be very happy, so you feel happy with the person, or they may feel guilty or fearful, whatever it may be, the empathetic person shares vicariously that feeling. But there's also a very important difference between empathy and compassion, in that with empathy, you feel what they're feeling, they're suffering, so you suffer. With compassion, you suffer with them, but you want to alleviate that suffering that they're having. That's not present, it's not implied in the word empathy. So in this way, compassion means the devotee who is compassionate wants to help the person who's suffering, who's fallen into this condition of life where they're separate from Krishna and from Krishna's devotees. So we know in Rupa Goswami describes in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that there's 64 transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one of them is compassion. And he gives two examples of how Krishna is compassionate. Does anyone know what those examples are? One is that Jarasandha, who was a very powerful king, a contemporary of Krishna, when he appeared on the planet. So he had, due to his force, his military force, he had defeated thousands upon thousands of other kings. Over 20,000 kings he had defeated in battle. Not only had he defeated them, but he actually imprisoned these kings. 20,800 kings imprisoned by Jarasandha. And the kings sent a messenger to Dwarka, appealing to Krishna there for their freedom. They expressed their devotion to Krishna, their reverence for him. They recognized his supremacy as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they appealed to him to save them from this terrible condition, being imprisoned by Jarasandha. So at that time, also, Krishna was in the Sudharma assembly hall, and another person came saying that Yudhisthira Maharaj wanted to perform this Rajasuya sacrifice. And so Krishna was now requested to go in two directions, one to save the kings and the other to participate in this great Rajasuya sacrifice. And so he called upon Uddhava to help him make this decision, a great devotee of his. And Uddhava said that actually to do this Rajasuya sacrifice, all the kings must submit to Yudhisthira. If they don't submit, then Yudhisthira will take them to battle. So that means that Jarasandha would have to submit to Yudhisthira, because Yudhisthira would become the emperor of the world. So in that way, they could agree to do the Rajasuya sacrifice for the pleasure of Maharaj Yudhisthira, his great devotee. And in the process of preparing for that sacrifice, Jarasandha must be defeated. So Krishna and all the assembled Vaishnavas accepted this solution. And to defeat Jarasandha, Krishna went with Bhima and also Arjuna. And they invited Jarasandha to fight with them one-on-one. So Jarasandha refused to fight with Krishna because he had ran away from the battlefield, considered a coward previously when Jarasandha was fighting. And Arjuna was younger, so he and Bhima fought ferociously, day after day after day. And finally, after, 28 days, something like that, Bhima said, "I can't defeat him, he's too strong." Actually, Jarasandha was better using the club than Bhima, but Bhima was stronger than Jarasandha. So between the two, they were very equally matched. So Krishna took a blade of grass and he tore it, he bifurcated the blade of grass. And in that way, he gave the hint that Jarasandha, when he was born in two parts, divided down the middle, and the demon Jara combined him and brought him to life. So he could be also defeated by reversing the process. So on the next day when they were fighting, Bhima did that. He threw Jarasandha down, stood on his ankle, and tore him asunder completely through the middle. So Jarasandha was defeated by that heroic act. And then the kings, the 20,800 kings, were freed. And they offered beautiful, beautiful prayers to Krishna as a result. They were quite skinny due to their imprisonment and dirty, poorly dressed. And they had no, interestingly enough, in their prayers to Krishna, they had no sense of bitterness or anger, resentment towards Jarasandha. Rather, after praising Krishna and thanking him for freeing them, they said that they had become proud by being kings. They had become enamored of their opulence. And through this experience of being defeated and then imprisoned by Jarasandha, they realized how vulnerable they were actually, that they were in complete illusion previously. And they thanked Krishna for freeing them from this illusion and promised to serve him. And so Krishna richly rewarded them and sent them back to their kingdoms, gave them a feast and properly clothed them, gave them chariots. So in this sense, you could say that Krishna was serving them both materially, because he restored their health, their well-being, but also he woke them up spiritually. So both things were served, the material aspect and the spiritual aspect. Another example of Krishna's compassion that Rupa Goswami gives is that after the battle of Kurukshetra, Grandfather Bhishma was lying on the bed of arrows. He had been shot through with many, many arrows. But he hadn't passed away because he had this boon from his father that he would only pass away when he wanted to, when he decided he was ready to pass away. At that point he would. So he was lying on this bed of arrows and he desired to see Krishna. And Yudhisthira Maharaj at that point, after the battle, was overwhelmed with sorrow that he had caused the death of so many millions and millions of people. And he thought about the wives that were now widows and the children without their fathers. And no one could console him, apparently. Even Krishna, apparently, could not console him. And Krishna wanted Grandfather Bhishma to be the person to console him. And so Yudhisthira Maharaj went to where Grandfather Bhishma was lying, along with his brothers and Krishna. And Krishna was not related by blood. And Yudhisthira Maharaj was the grandson, as were his brothers, of Bhishma Dev, one could say. But Krishna came there out of his compassion because he wanted to please his devotee, his great, great devotees, one of the Mahajans, Grandfather Bhishma. So it's another example of his extraordinary compassion and reciprocation with his devotees that I think we can benefit from meditating on. So also Krishna descends through this very world out of his compassion. He says in the Gita himself that he comes millennium after millennium because he wants to deliver the devotees, to annihilate the demons, to reestablish the principles of religion. This is Krishna's compassion for us, for the fallen conditioned souls. Also, when Prabhupada was speaking during this very unusual time of the war between India and Pakistan, he asked the devotees a question: why does Krishna come? He can just stay in the spiritual sky. He doesn't need to come. So the devotees mention these things that Krishna himself mentions. He wants to reestablish the principles of spiritual life, and Prabhupada said his representatives can do that. Well, he wants to annihilate the demons. And Prabhupada said he can have famine, he can have wars, he can have earthquakes. Just eliminate the demons is not difficult for Krishna. So the devotees were a little confused. And Prabhupada said he really comes to please his devotees. That's why he comes. He loves his devotees and he wants to be with them, exchange these beautiful pastimes with them. So that is why Krishna appears, he says. So we know that Krishna wanted to experience the love that Radharani had for him. And for that reason, he came to this world as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with her beautiful complexion of molten gold and her love for him, her mood of service for him, selfless service. So Radharani, Prabhupada describes, is the tender-hearted feminine counterpart of Krishna. Krishna's compassion, his love for his devotees is manifest in Srimati Radharani. And therefore, those who have gone to Vrindavan, they know that everywhere her name is chanted. It's written on the trees, it's written on the walls. Because, as Prabhupada describes, if a devotee pleases Radharani, and she goes to Krishna and says, oh, this is a wonderful devotee, Krishna must accept a devotee, Radharani's compassion. So he came as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with this tremendous compassion for the fallen souls. And he manifested that from the very beginning. The process, of course, for this age of coming in contact with Krishna, of reestablishing our relationship with Krishna, is to chant his names, as we do every day by Prabhupada's instructions. And so when Lord Chaitanya appeared, there was this lunar eclipse, and everyone, whatever the religion, you know, Muslims also, children, old people, men, women, everyone was chanting the holy names of Krishna. So even from the very beginning of his appearance, the chanting was there. And then he had this wonderful pastime as a baby, that when he would cry, the only thing that would stop him was to hear the holy names chanted by the ladies of the village, ladies of Navadvipa. And when they understood this, there was constant chanting because he would cry a lot. So he would cry and they would chant, and then he would stop crying and then induce them to chant again by crying. And then very quickly he became so accomplished as a scholar. But even when he was teaching his students, he would teach them grammar in terms of Krishna's names. And then after he went to Gaya and became a disciple of Ishwarapuri, and he started this Sankirtan in the home of Srivas Thakur, and after a short time, because the Kazi was informed by the people, this chanting is creating a disturbance. It's going to wake up the Lord. He's going to be angry and there'll be devastation. So the Kazi smashed a murdunga to try to stop the chanting of the holy names. And then Lord Chaitanya, by his potency, gathered this enormous, enormous crowd of people to approach the Kazi's house and discuss Krishna Katha with the Kazi. And from that point, the Sankirtan was allowed in the area. So throughout, my point is, throughout his life, his appearance time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was propagating the holy names of the Lord out of his compassion for the fallen souls. And of course, that simply expanded after he took sannyas and he went to South India. For 2 years, he was traveling, and everywhere he traveled, simply by embracing people, by preaching, by being present, he induced them to chant the holy names of the Lord, transformed villages one after the other after the other. And then on his return to Puri, this Rath Yatra started. And Rath Yatra was a massive occasion to chant the holy names of Krishna. Devotees would come from Bengal, and we were reading recently how they would have 7 different kirtan parties, and they would assign someone to play the murdunga, someone to dance, someone to sing, all in glorification of Krishna's holy names as the method to come closer to Krishna in this age of Kali. So this is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's compassion, how he expressed it, and how he wanted all of us also to express it. But in fact, it's not limited simply to the holy names, Lord Chaitanya's gift of compassion to us, in that everything he did, you can relate to this spirit of compassion for the fallen souls, because he created a whole culture in which we could be enriched with spiritual life. You can say, for example, his chastisement of Chota Haridas, that's also discussed in this volume, Antya Lila, chastisement of Chota Haridas. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not want any hypocrisy in his mission. In other words, he wanted us to be genuine, not that we say one thing and do another. And when he saw some hint of hypocrisy in the behavior of this sannyasi, Chota Haridas, in that he glanced at a woman in an inappropriate way, with the mentality of enjoyment, and Lord Chaitanya would not associate with him again. Even the devotees, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda, Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Jai Shri Shri Gornitai, Jai Shri Prabhupada. Even the devotees appealed to Lord Chaitanya that his offense was very minor, now he's learned his lesson, now you please accept him back. But Lord Chaitanya, even though he's the personification of compassion, he would not, because he wants to establish this culture of genuine spirituality. And we see, especially now in Kali Yuga, how people will cheat in the name of being a spiritual leader. They'll take people's money, they'll take all sorts of worship, and not give them anything genuine, and in the meantime, they themselves are behaving in an irreligious way. And this has become so pervasive that people are losing faith in established religions. Just hearing last night how churches are becoming increasingly empty because people are disillusioned by the leaders of those churches, that they're engaging in activities that are not only unpalatable, but sometimes even illegal. And so how can you have faith in such a process? So to establish the necessity, the essential nature that this movement must remain pure, Lord Chaitanya chastised Chota Haridas, and that was actually compassionate, that all of us can benefit and concentrate on being who we want to be, being genuine. Another example of his compassion is that he established the importance of respect amongst the devotees. That there's an example that this Jagannanda Pandit is quite a fiery personality, Satyabhama in Lord Krishna's pastimes. So at one point he was instructing Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami was senior to him by age, and he was also more learned than Jagannanda Pandit. And Lord Chaitanya would not have it. He said, no, this is inappropriate for this Jaga, this boy, to instruct such an exalted personality as Lord Chaitanya, as Sanatan Goswami. So in this way, he's establishing the importance of respect amongst devotees, part of the culture. And another critical part of the culture is humility. There's a wonderful pastime here with Bhattacharya. I thought I could read that. It's also in this Antya Lila. It's chapter 7, 16, for those who have books. 7:16. This chapter is the meeting of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ballabha Bhatta. So Ballabha Bhatta was a very learned personality and also a Vaishnava. However, he was proud. And when he met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he glorified the Lord as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the knower of everything. And Lord Chaitanya could sense that this person was proud. And so Lord Chaitanya told him, this is text 16 of chapter 7 in the Antya Lila, "My dear Ballabha Bhatta, you are a learned scholar. Kindly listen to me. I am a sannyasi of the Mayavad school. Therefore, I have no chance of knowing what Krishna bhakti is. Nevertheless, my mind has become purified because I have associated with Advaitacharya, who is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He goes on, he glorifies Advaitacharya, and then he glorifies Nityananda Prabhu, the Avaduta, who's also directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, always ecstatic with love of Godhead. And then he glorifies Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and then he glorifies in many verses Ramananda Roy. Verse after verse, he glorifies Ramananda Roy. And finally, after glorifying all these devotees, one after the other, Balabhabhata has a realization. Here, this is text 53 of this same chapter, chapter 7. Knowing that Balabhabhata's heart was full of pride, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke these words, hinting at how one can learn about devotional service. And Balabhabhata was thinking, I am a great Vaishnava. Having learned all the conclusions of Vaishnava philosophy, I can understand the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam and explain it very well. This pride had existed for a long time within his mind, but as he heard the preaching of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his pride was cut down, and he immediately desired to see all the devotees. So this is a way, also a foundational principle of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's compassion. Compassion means that one has to feel oneself very insignificant in the presence of Krishna. It's interesting that each one of us is important because we're part and parcel of Krishna, and Krishna is supremely important. So you cannot say the soul is unimportant. The soul is important, but there are innumerable, innumerable souls, so we're insignificant. So somehow within ourselves we need to balance our insignificance with our importance. And the insignificant side is that we're one of many, many innumerable souls. And all we can do is pray to Krishna to kindly shower his mercy upon us so that we can experience his love and have evoke some feeling in our heart for his presence in our lives. So these are some thoughts. I think it'd be interesting to also go on with this particular chapter that we're reading from, to show also Lord Chaitanya's indiscriminate compassion. This is text 66, also from chapter 3. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this from Haridas Thakur, the happiness within his heart increased, but as a matter of course, he still inquired further. On this earth there are many living entities, the Lord said, some moving and some not moving. What will happen to the trees, plants, insects, and other living entities? How will they be delivered from material bondage? So our theme for this lead-up is Lord Chaitanya's compassion for all living entities without discrimination. So here we're also including the insects and the trees, the birds and the beasts. Haridas Thakur replied, my dear Lord, the deliverance of all moving and non-moving living entities takes place only by your mercy. You have already granted this mercy and delivered them. You have loudly chanted the Hare Krishna mantra, and everyone, moving or not moving, has benefited by hearing it. My Lord, the moving entities who have heard your loud sankirtan have already been delivered from bondage to the material world. And after the non-moving living entities, like the trees, hear it, there is an echo. Actually, however, it is not an echo. It is the kirtan of the non-moving living entities. All this, although inconceivable, is possible by your mercy. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is even delivering the trees and the insects. What a glorious shelter we have found under his lotus feet. And this genuine compassion actually fosters a harmonious society, while the well-being of each and every individual in it is foremost, because people realize the inherent worth and the dignity of every soul. So with that spirit, there's respect, there's humility, there's gratitude, there's understanding. Compassion is very fundamental to the culture of Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. So we have about 5 minutes left if there's some reflections or questions. Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Antari. As you were speaking, I was thinking that Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is filled with description of such personalities like Haridas Thakur, Sanatana Goswami, who were extremely attached to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Gaur Purnima is coming in next 2 days, what can we do that our attachment to Lord Chaitanya increases?
I think that's the prayer of all of us, that we want our attachment to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to increase. And I think by absorbing ourselves, especially in this very rich, nourishing literature, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and feeling his beautiful, sweet exchanges with the devotees and the variety of exchanges that he had, this will help us actually get some genuine feeling for the Lord. And if we can discuss those, we can churn those with others who have similar interests, that will also increase our attachment and our genuine feeling for the Lord. It's such a beautiful literature, Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's nothing quite like it.
Hare Krishna. In one of the songs of Narottam Das Thakur, he says, Gaurangera Sangigane Nitya Siddha Bolimani, that the associates of Lord Chaitanya, they're all Nitya Siddhas. And there is that book, Gaurgandesh Deepikat, where it explains the identity of the associates of Krishna, of Lord Chaitanya and Krishna Lila. So I was thinking that because you were saying the Lord descends to please his devotees. But it seems like most of his devotees, they descend along with him to the material world. So I was wondering what is the meaning of that, because surely he could enjoy their association in the spiritual world. So then why does he descend with his devotees here?
Well, I think it's very related to the first part, that by his relationships, his exchanges, his pastimes with his devotees, we get to read about it and experience it through reading. And so that gives us great pleasure and great motivation to enter into those pastimes ourselves. If it was simply descriptions of the spiritual world, it may seem very far away, very unattainable by us. But this makes it quite accessible, that yes, it happened on this planet, and it happened in such a sweet, relishable way, in such a way that I can relate to, that yes, perhaps I can also become qualified to enter into this beautiful relationship. Is that okay? Prayer for?
There's the pastime with Ramachandra when he criticized Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he paid for this criticism. But also there's in the Mahabharata, it mentions that critics take the karma of the of that which they accuse others of, and so this is the one thing that we have to be very careful of, criticizing devotees, because we don't know how they're, what they're doing, and what their heart is. And there's several people, and I remember Singh Kushikrata Das, before his last days, and he was an incredible person. But he was, Harisori had made an announcement that he needed help and support financially to survive. So I went there and to see him, and I gave a donation to him. But what got me was his absolute humility. He actually started offering dhanabhas to me, and I was, this is where at Radharaman temple, he was in an apartment down there, and I was invited to prasad. It was an amazing experience, but to see, you know, this person, Kushagrana Das, was a lifetime's experience, and to notice his humility. And he was a special soul, a special in that he was thought to be eccentric, but eventually he turned out to be one of the greatest translators of the Goswami work. So that was one of my best experiences that I had in Vrindavan. So it was just a comment. But this critics take the karma. This we have to be very careful, because we see what we see in them, what we are, and that's a problem. Okay.
It's very similar to what Prabhupada says at the end of this purport. He says here, to blaspheme a devotee who is trying to relieve Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's anxiety for the fallen souls is the greatest offense. One who does so is simply awaiting punishment for his envy.
So, Hare Krishna. So as you were speaking, I couldn't help but to think of the compassion of Christ, the Christ. And although he didn't give the holy name, holy names as the Yuga Dharma, religion for Yuga Dharma, there is a lot of comparison between Lord Chaitanya and the Christ. And he suffered, he was the embodiment of compassion. So when we say, coming from a Christian background, so when we say Lord Chaitanya is the most compassionate, there was a bit of a conflict of interest within me, because I was thinking, well, not that I'm comparing, it's not a rivalry, but I always see Christ there as well in my mind. And he's known for his compassion, especially his famous line, forgive them for they know what they do. And also, he was so harassed in his day, in those days. He would change direction so he wouldn't fall into the hands of the Yavanas, who wanted to kill him. And this was like probably daily, on a daily basis. So he was the most compassionate in that way. Because they were committing so much offenses and sins because of the attack on him, because of ignorance. So I just can't help but to see the comparison between Lord Chaitanya and Christ. That's just my comment there.
Well, we understand that Christ is the Son of God, and so he's representing God through his compassion, just as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees, like Srila Prabhupada, they manifested Lord Chaitanya's compassion for the benefit of all of us. So Christ is doing similarly. Any other points?
Thank you for the class. You mentioned about to find a balance between our insignificance, to know us as one of many, and to also know us as one, the only, like the uniqueness. How can we find a balance?
I think the secret is the humility that a devotee experiences, actually feels, because of Krishna's greatness. We feel that whatever ability we have, whatever intelligence we have, whatever we can remember, whatever skills Krishna has given us, those are all his mercy. So we understand that, yes, I can do something by Krishna's grace. I am insignificant, and yet by his grace, in some way I can serve him, and that is his causeless mercy upon me, and my eternal gratitude goes to him for allowing me to serve him in whatever menial or exalted way, so-called exalted way, that I'm able. Does that work? Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.